Hi, I'm Karen Alcoholic.
Hi, Karen.
And I'm grateful to be here. You all have been wonderful, every one of you. A lot of you heard me last night, so I'll try to make it a little different. I was raised in an alcoholic home. I had two alcoholic parents. And what that did for me, that's not why I'm alcoholic. But that is why I was insecure and fearful. And that fed my alcoholism and ran my life. I drank to the point of seizures, and then I drank to the point I had to incorporate the seizures because I wasn't going to quit what I was doing. It was the only thing I had going, and it was my backbone. And so I had to start planning around the seizures. I was always working. I was always self-supporting, rather. And so what I had to do is, and I drove a long distance to get to work. So I would drink while I'm getting ready to go to work. I would drink at lunch. I also had ruined my stomach with all of this. So in order to eat, I had to drink because I had to deaden the nerves in my stomach that was just raw. And so I had to drink until I was numb, until my stomach was numb, so that I could eat, because sometimes you have to. And I tried not to eat also because eating diminishes the feeling. And I was going for the feeling. So I would drink at lunch. And this is all just maintenance drinking. You know, the party was long gone. This was just so that I could feel regular. And so I'd drink at lunch, and I'd go back in and work. And then by the end of, from the time from lunch to the end of the day, it's gotten too low. My level has gotten too low and dangerously low. And I know that, I have experience now. I had a seizure in front of my little niece when she was 2 years old. I had a seizure walking down the street. I had seizures at job interviews. I had, they weren't going away. And I want to mention, I've never had one since I quit drinking. It was simply as a result of when my blood alcohol would get too low, my body would crash. It couldn't deal with not having that substance. So it had to be a constant. And then I'd work my afternoon, and then I would go out to the car, and I would have to just sit there and drink for a few minutes before I drove half an hour home. And because I was safer like that than if I hadn't. And this process was endless. This process was day in and day out. And when you're living that kind of a life, like there were brief relationships, but there was nothing. You can't have friends. I mean, how can you explain what you're doing? How can you? It doesn't make sense to me, you know. And no one else. You know, I am a huge secret. They don't know at work. You wonder how can you pull that off. And I can tell you that everyone in here is an actor and an actress. We have pulled off things that unbelievable. You know, and people want to believe in you. You know, they want to believe in you. And so they'll overlook a lot for quite a while. But the day comes for all of us. So, my life just went on like that. And I remember, like, real typical memories is I would drive home, and I had no food in the house. And I would drive home, and I needed food. You know, I needed food, but I only had, like, $5. And so I couldn't buy food and alcohol, and it's not a Friday. And plus, a weekend was never enough time to recoup. When you go through a seizure and you have to recover afterwards, and all the shit, everything, it takes more than a weekend. You know, I mean, it takes like a week to get through all that. And I didn't have a week. I never had that time. So I had to just keep it up and just keep it up until I crashed. And but I'd drive home and I'd tell myself the whole time, I'm going to get food, I'm going to get food, I'm going to get food. And stealing myself for this, I never got food. You know, like the last minute, you know, I'm thinking, I'm going to get food. And then, you know, I don't have any voice in it. You know, I go to the liquor store and I get something to drink. And that just became paramount to everything. Everything it became paramount to. And so, anyway, to sum that all up, because you've all heard it, as I drank to the point of seizures, and then I drank to the point that I had to incorporate all that in my life. And I'm just trying to think tonight, like some of the things that were really transformative in my sobriety. And one of the things was, the first and foremost and most important is that I had to become aware of the presence of God. It's amazing. Like, you know, all this can exist around you and you are completely unaware. Like, I mean, life, I had a solitary life, yet I was surrounded by people all the time. So it just doesn't matter if you aren't aware of it. And so, you know, I became aware of the presence of God. And then I also, as I mentioned last night, you know, that alcoholic women are incredibly strong-willed, all of us. Even the sweet-looking ones. So what that is, that self-will is ego. It's all ego. And I didn't know this, but and I felt that I had to have this. That's all I had. You know, I had to have this strong will. I had to get myself through life. I had to continue like this. And it was I never wanted that to go away because it's all I had. And I couldn't hear other people because my own will was so strong. And, like, I had no use for women. I didn't identify with women. You know, I know some people here understand that and some won't. But, like, I was always with men. Men were always the, because they had strong wills. The women I knew, you know, the few women that I knew, my mom and my family, they, you know, they didn't have a strong will. And I had such a dominant will that I needed to turn it over to more dominant. And that's all I found was, you know, the men were more dominant. So that's what I, you know, that was what I sought out. And so I had to find a woman that was dominant. I needed to be dominated, you know, for my own good. I needed to have that slapped out of me, and so that I could rebuild in a useful way. You know, I wasn't useful to myself or anyone the way that I was. And so one of the first things that happened was in my last recovery center. Last night I told you I was in countless detoxes and two recovery centers. And the second recovery center, I came across a man. This was the first one that inserted himself in my life. He was dominant. And I believe that he came at such an important time. He wasn't my counselor. He was someone else's. But he inserted himself in my life and he broke my will. And that I am forever grateful for that. You know, that was an important thing that needed to happen. And it was exactly the right time. When I was at my weakest, you know, it had to come then. And so then I kind of became teachable. I was at least interested then, and I knew somebody had something that I didn't have and that I needed. And so I started paying attention. And then when I got out of that recovery center, I found a sponsor that I was able, and it was a woman, and she was smarter than me, and I knew that. And she'd been around, and so she would. But I still couldn't quite take direction. That was a slow process for me. But one of the things that she recognized was that because she had women friends. I mean, I had no women friends, none. And she knew how important that was. So she told me. She kept telling me, "You must go to women's meetings. You must go to women's meetings." And I couldn't see any reason to go to women's meetings. You know, for one thing, I was fearful of women. My relationship with men was clear. I knew exactly what's going to happen there. I knew what my role was. I knew everything about that. But I did not know how to interact with women. You know, it was a new territory, and it was very scary for me. And so I would put up the bluff, you know, where no one will come close because, you know, I'm very afraid, but I'm not looking like I'm approachable. So, but she would tell me, I must go to women's meetings. I must go. And I would tell her I was going to go, and I didn't. And so finally she made me start picking her up. So I had to pick her up to go to the women's meeting. And I have been going to that women's meeting now for, I bet, 15 years. You know, it is the core of my sobriety. You know, I mean, I am in that, from that, that was one of the places that I really learned community too. And also the healing power of a woman's touch. Like there, you know, I was fearful. In my family, we didn't touch. That was very like, what do they want? What do they want? Why are they touching me? Like all that stuff. You know, it's like, it was fearful for me. It was scary, you know, but I finally was just able to relax with all of that and know that they don't want anything. They just want to give. It's comfort. And I do that now all the time. And because I know the power of it. I know what it feels like to a wounded person. And so I do that to my sponsees. You know, I touch them lovingly, and I know that I impart what I received, and I know the comfort that that gives. And then real quick, when was I supposed to stop? At 10 more minutes? 5 more minutes. Okay, thank you. I also, another real transformative thing is when I got with my husband. And we met about 15 years ago. And I was just one of those people. It took me, I used to drink before I came to meetings. And it was 10 years in and out, for anyone that didn't hear my story last night, 10 years in and out of AA before it finally took for me. And it took real good now. But so I met him, and he was a very active member of AA, and I was a fringe character. Because this is about the same time that I started going to my women's meeting, just started, and I was just a fringe character in AA. You can do that for a really long time. You know, when people would start talking about their fourth step, you would just move away, you know, and just like whenever it got to that, you can talk about, you know, going to meetings and all that, but when it came something that, you know, that you hadn't done, you just moved away. And so my husband, being the active person that he was, you know, he wanted to be with me, but he couldn't, you know, because I was a fringe character. And it was also, part for what it looked like, but also part for, he feared for himself. Who really wants to be with someone that hasn't done their fourth step? You know, that, I mean, who really? Like, everyone knows that you're on the bar side, you know, and you are this close to a drink, even though, and I didn't think so. You know, you think you know it all, and you think everyone's wrong, and but you're that close. So he said, you know, that was the choice, that if you want to be with me, you've got to get on board. You know, you've got to start doing this. And he made it, and also he brought in, like, it was a new circle of friends when I came into his. It was, you know, that's like when they say hang with the winners, there's good reason to say that. You know, you will rise to the level that you're at. And so, you know, I was now at a new level, and I had to sink or swim. And so I wanted to be here. I started swimming, and I did the work. And it doesn't matter why, you know, it doesn't matter why that it was because I wanted to be with this man. You know, like, that's just the impetus. You know, I mean, I should have wanted to do it my own, but that doesn't really matter in the end. I've done it, and I'm grateful, and I stay in it. And then another thing is for my women's meeting, I learned to sponsor. You know, like, I became a sponsor, and I feel the love. I give the love, and I feel the love. I have gained respect from that. You know, thank you. I am active in sponsorship, and like sometimes, I mean, I have an idyllic life. I have a wonderful life. I have a life that is impossible for me to believe from where I came, what I now have. And yet sometimes I can look at my life and find it wanting. You know, what I realized when that happens is it's when I'm not working with a newcomer. Because when I am not working with a newcomer, I'm not invested in others. And I have found that certainly for me, I need always be invested in others. For if I'm not, I am scrutinizing myself, and I see my failings, and I, you know, what I should have done, what, you know, all that. That is not helpful. It's not helpful to me, and it's not helpful to anyone around me, because those are things that I cannot really, how I will be bettered and how I will be, it's always in working with others. It's always in helping others that I am bettered. It, you know, it would never be by thinking I should go back to school. Going back to school isn't going to fix what's wrong with me. It might better other things, but it's not going to fix what's wrong with me. And I also want to talk in the last couple of minutes about my family, that I am the only, I have three siblings, and none of them appear to be alcoholic. But my family, everyone is in their own separate orbit. There was collisions and animosity in my family. It was never cohesive. It was awful. And today, it is completely different. It is completely different. And it has to be just by the healing that I received and how I have brought that back into my family just by my interactions with them. Nobody else has been in recovery, but just what I have brought back in, they have changed. We have all changed. It's all back into my family. And there is love in my family. And, we never touched. None of us ever. It was, you know, everyone was disparate. Today when we see, oh, you know, we love each other. We're always touching each other and telling each other how much we love each other. And it is a warm, welcome place to be in my family. That's incredible. Thank you very much.